You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
I don't know how to say this. Betelgeuse star?
You're not a child of the 80s. If you were, you would know the film with a similar name. The star is Betelgeuse.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Wire.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, known as the IPCC, released its synthesis report for the sixth assessment cycle last week. I spoke to Olaf Morgenstern from NIWA about the impact of climate change on our weather patterns, as well as asking him his thoughts on this IPCC synthesis report. I started by asking him about how our rising climate is going to affect our weather patterns.
So over the next 10 to 20 years, somewhere around 0.1 to 0.3 degrees of additional warming is what I would expect. And that doesn't depend much on emissions or so. This is just the warming that's baked in or that's seen in pretty much all the scenarios that we're looking at. Time. So what effect will that have on our weather? I mean, so the warming that we have seen so far, especially over the last 40 years or so, intensification of events amongst other things, speeding up of the rate of loss of ice in the Southern Alps, for example, which... Yeah, so I mean, the event that we had last month, Cyclone Gabrielle, severe precipitation events that cause flooding and so on are only going to get more likely in this kind of warming scenario, yes.
Right, so would you say that climate change has a direct impact on severe weather events?
Indeed, yes. So the report, the synthesis report of IPCC, which came out today, makes clear, and in fact it's built on previous reports that have also made this clear, that there is a linkage between severe weather events in general, especially for rain events. So they become severe with every, increase in temperature that we experience. That's simply because the atmosphere holds, that's one effect, and it also might mean that the tropical cyclone, for example, Gabrielle, that made landfall might have become more... better attain its power, its wind strength in particular, or the minimum pressure at its center because of the warm sea atmosphere which it traversed when it came here.
Right, so does sea temperature have a direct effect on the strength of tropical cyclones?
Yes, I mean, so they only form when the surface, the water, the ocean surface is exceeding 27 degrees.
In terms of taking action against climate change, what does this look like?
One is they have to cut out emissions and have to inject speed and vigor and scale into whatever we're doing to mitigate climate greenhouse gases. And that requires taking pretty drastic action, but it requires will and dedication to do. So that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that we have to, irrespective of what we do on the mitigation front, we have to get ready. That means we have to adapt our cultural systems in particular. So our cities, our rural landscapes, everything has to get ready for a changing climate. And so, the flooding events and the damage that was done by them, for example, the flooding in Auckland recently or the flooding in Hawke's Bay, it's partly, the damage is partly there because we were not well adapted to that sort of weather event, floodplains essentially. And we need to understand that that's, as we go forward, we need to change our strategy there to factor in that such events may become more frequent. If we put assets in harm's way, essentially, then they probably become uninsurable. And, we shouldn't be doing that. I mean, that's a way of adaptation. Also, the types of agriculture that we will do in the future might have to factor in that both heavy rain events and even flooding may occur more frequently, but also drought. I mean, Hawke's Bay is also famous for the occasional drought that can happen there. And that's also... In general, droughts around the world are projected to become more severe. As we plan and go for the future, we need to just get ready to think outside the box. Think outside of what we've seen over the last 100 years. It's possible that there will be weather events and that we just haven't seen in the past that could happen.
Right, because I noticed that a big focus of the synthesis is that adaptation. However, in terms of mitigation, do you think we're able to reverse some of the global warming climate change impact?
Yes. So in fact, the most optimistic of the five scenarios that the report uses builds in parts on the assumption that there'll be negative net CO2 emissions or net greenhouse gas emissions, which means we are essentially collecting CO2 out of the atmosphere by planting trees, for example, by taking some other measures to suck CO2 out of the atmosphere and turn it into concrete or turn it into rock, turn it into trees, turn it into whatever material we can have that basically absorbs carbon. And there are technologies out there. It's just not clear how they can be. I mean, we know the physical chemistry, for example, if you're talking industrial plants or so, that can do this. But they don't exist at scale, and the ones that exist are a drop in the ocean. I mean, they're way too small. We need much bigger such structures in order to, especially if we keep producing CO2 through fossil fuel burning, which, you know, it is very easy to do. There's plenty of fossil fuel out there, but if we do that and we have to collect the fossil fuel, the CO2 afterwards from the atmosphere, becomes a really big task. So for this to be feasible, we really, really need to cut back on our CO2 emissions very drastically.
Would you like to see the government pay attention to the findings of this synthesis?
Well, I better hope so. I mean, the IPCC reports are done on behalf of governments, essentially, and they are used heavily, as far as I understand, in policy settings. So, for example, the Zero Carbon Act that previous government, Jacinda Ardern's government, managed to pass a couple of years ago was heavily inspired by it's a response to the Paris Agreement, and the Paris Agreement built on the Fifth Assessment Report, which came out in 2013. So yes, I mean, so they pay attention. The question is, and I can't speak for them, of course, the question is what action will they take, or which actions, which measures will we take in response to this, basically call to arms. I mean, what we need to do is take measures to concretely reduce our emissions. And that, you know, some of them are low-hanging fruit, very easy win-win situations, and others require some investment, some, you know, commitment, finance in particular. And that's where it becomes difficult. I mean, you know, one such problem is the national battery that's being under discussion. So that's a relatively pricey project to undertake, and it's a large change to the landscape in central Otago that's being considered. So that's in this basket of mitigation options. We want to be able to switch off our remaining power plant that uses fossil fuels, and to do so we have to address the intermittency or energy storage problems that surround renewables.
Right, so you mentioned earlier that there's more rain for the West Coast, and in New Zealand we're seeing more tropical cyclones, more flooding. What about worldwide? What's happening due to climate change weather-wise?
Well, I mean, so the events that make the headlines are typically the extreme events. So we saw, for example, in North America, they had huge fires last year, even as far north as Canada. Very large forest fires, also in California, on the west coast of the United States, followed by unprecedented flooding now. And so, I mean, these extreme events are all around the world. Germany had a very large flood 2 years ago, at about the same time when China had an extremely large flood in central China.
So would you say this is why mitigation is really important?
Yeah, I mean, so this is... to some people, it's an economic question. You know, what's the cheapest course of action here? And it turns out that these climate disasters, including Cyclone Gabrielle, are really expensive to handle, and they'll become more expensive. One effect of these disasters is that they paralyze government. They absorb all the financial might that we have, you know, and to clean up the mess afterwards. But that is not a retroactive, not a proactive response, essentially. We need to anticipate that these events will occur more often, especially in the long term. And if we do nothing, then they may well grow out of hand. They become so big that they can overwhelm systems. And so it's a lot better than not to get to that point and take mitigation actions that limit the damage. I mean, some damage is baked into the system, hard to reverse, or impossible to reverse, but at least we can limit the damage. So the worst we can still avoid, that's one message in this synthesis report. But only if, as I said, we heed the call and take action.
If we take action, you mentioned that some of these changes are going to be harder to reverse. However, would extreme weather events reduce if we mitigated well?
Carbon sequestration, so removal of carbon out of the atmosphere, well, would relatively quickly have impacts on surface temperature. So as we do that, the projected surface temperature under the scenario where this sequestration plays a large role is projected to decrease in the second half of the century. So that would then directly affect, again, you know, some types of extreme weather that would become less likely or less damaging as a consequence. The tropical cyclones, they are relatively short-lived events, and they derive their power from the warm water of the oceans, essentially. Now, if we limit the heat in these oceans, we then limit the energy that these cyclones basically consume or redistribute and cause havoc. So the mitigation in the long term it saves us a lot of harm, a lot of pain, a lot of cost.
Right.
But of course, in the short term, on the other hand, it does cost money, and at least some of these measures do cost money. On the other hand, maintaining our lifestyle, dependent on fossil fuels, also costs money, and we should make sure we don't spend it. We spend it this money wisely. So it costs in the short term, and also, of course, funding available to mitigation measures is very unequally distributed around the world, and also the political will is probably unequally distributed around the world.
It sure is.
So I'm hoping that the synthesis report is sort of. So it draws on existing science. I mean, it's the combination of the last report published by IPCC in this current 6 assessment cycle, and it's drawing on the reports that are previously published, the 3 working group reports and some special reports, and it really builds a bridge between the physical science and the impacts and the consequences also for our human systems. The policy options that are out there. I mean, it basically presents this on the plate to politicians and also to the rest of us. Yeah, and so I hope it has the intended effect of stimulating a bit of activity there.
That was me speaking to Olaf Morgenstern from NIWA about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. We'll be back after the short break, but join us again after. You can text in on 5395 if you have any thoughts on our pieces.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.